You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. The Satin Cowboy and the Seven Deadly Sins is the name of Silas Height's band, or at least the band he records as. Silas's day job is as a film, TV, and game composer, and says that his Americana project is one of the ways he stays grounded and keeps in touch with his rural upbringing. His latest album, Amigos, will be out in August. Silas is my guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles. Hi, Silas. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I guess I should say good morning. I'm on the East Coast. You're on the West Coast, so we've got a bit of a time difference. I appreciate you being up bright and early to chat with us.
Yeah, that's fine. This is my I'm always up early. It's my creative time in the morning. I actually hate working at night, which is kind of weird for musicians, but
right, yeah.
Yeah, I just end up slowing down. I like to hang out with my wife at night and have some beers or have some fun, whatever. And this is my golden time to create, but I'm definitely happy to stop and talk to you.
Yeah, good. Well, good. Well, you've got a new record on the way, and we definitely want to chat about that. But before we get into that, maybe we can set up the background. I have a note here that you sent me, and before we kind of get started here, and you are a composer for film and commercials, but the thing that caught my attention was you said that the music that you compose that we're going to talk about this afternoon is a way to keep you grounded and in touch with your rural upbringing. So I wondered if you could elaborate on that a little bit and kind of give us the background for the music that you get to create, I guess you'd call on the side.
So typically I'm exploring films and TV shows and commercials and video games. That's been my day job for almost 18 years now. I'm very grateful. It's awesome. And the styles of music I'm asked to write are all over the map. Like, I'll write for an orchestra or for, I do a lot of string work. I did a lot of a TV show called Chef's Table on Netflix. Did different episodes of that, and that kind of got me attention as writing for, like, strings in sort of a modern classical way. So I'll do that, and then the next day, it's a commercial, and it's, like, very modern EDM, or, maybe I have to do rock and roll or something, and then a video game is something quirky.
Okay.
So it's kind of all over the place, which I love. But the album that I'm working on, Amigos, or that's about to come out next month, Amigos, is from my band, quote unquote, The Satin Cowboy and the Seven Deadly Sins. And that music is very Americana,
right? It's
kind of a blend of, as Americana is, a blend of styles, but sort of roots, rock, country, bluegrass, all that stuff sort of mixed together. And I don't get to write in that style for work, but it's something that's very close to my heart. And I said, what I said about growing up in a rural setting is very true. I grew up in this tiny gold mining town called Crown King, Arizona, and there's only about maybe just over 100 people living there, full-time residents, up in the mountains, beautiful, but very remote, no pavement, no government, no police. Went to a one-room school.
Okay, wow.
Amazing place to grow up, yeah. my dad's a musician, and he would play with the bar band. There's one old saloon there, it's like, you know, over 100 years old. And he would play with whatever musicians in town, playing old rock and roll and old country and stuff like that. And I think it just sort of seeped into me. And this project is a way to kind of keep in touch with that and express myself through that, sort of genre. And I'd like to think I'm putting my own sort of bend on it and influences. But that's that.
I'm going to throw out a word here that maybe most people don't know, and I just kind of accidentally showed up there one day, but I have visions of Oatman when you're telling me that story of the little town of Oatman where the burros roam through there, and it's basically a one-street town, the mining town. Are you familiar with that?
No, where's Oatman?
I believe it's also in Arizona. It's out not terribly far from Las Vegas. But it's apparently a lot of films were filmed there in the past using the backdrop of the desert and the mountains, and just has some history. And I'm visioning that when you're telling me about this small town, and I hear reflections of that in the music for this album, just that kind of cowboy feel, just. Almost some of them kind of give me that 40s and 50s Western music, Western movie kind of theme to it. Yeah, so I appreciate that story, and I'm sure that a lot of that has to bleed over as influence for some of the songs that you've written for this.
Yeah, I'm definitely influenced by older country, not so much the newer stuff in the last 20 years or so. It hasn't really spoken to me, but. Probably up through the 70s, you know, when you had, like, all the way from, I love early stuff like the Carter Family, and I love a little bit further along Bob Wills and Pet the Playboys. I love that Western swing stuff, and, you know, even Johnny Cash and there up until, like the 70s with, like, you know, when John Prine and guys like that they're country, but also more singer-songwriter, you know, they could fit in that category as well. Love that stuff, too. So not really so much the modern pop sounding stuff, but every once in a while there's the modern stuff that, you know, I'll find that I kind of like. It's usually not the real popular stuff, but, you know, there's some good singer-songwriters out there still doing their thing, and so, but, you know, I pull from inspiration from that, and then, of course, bluegrass is huge. I don't think I'm a good enough player on any one instrument to call myself a bluegrass picker by any means, but I love the instrumentation of it, mandolin and banjo and acoustic guitar and stuff like that. So I dip into that quite a bit.
Do you find it difficult at all to bounce between genres when you get asked to compose music for these different things that you do?
No.
No? An easy transition, huh? Between all of those different.
Yeah. I guess, gosh, I've been doing it for so long. It's really not. And that's why one of the reasons I became a composer is I really enjoy different styles of music.
Yeah.
And, you know, figuring out what makes them tick and how to recreate it and then do something new and interesting with it. And also then, you know, making it serve whatever visual, you know, I'm working on at the time, whether it's a scene in a film or, you know, a video game or whatever.
Yeah. I read in some of the press notes that you got to hang out as a kid with your uncle, I believe, right? Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo?
Yeah, Mark and Bob. Actually, I saw them when I was a kid, but the first 7 or 8 years of my career here in Los Angeles was working at Mark's studio. They both worked there.
Yeah, sweet.
And so I came up from an intern all the way to in-house composer. And,
wow.
You know, basically learned how to do what I do in terms of scoring from them. And, you know, they get asked to do all kinds of styles as well and, you know, also do the same thing, basically, film, TV, commercials, video games, all that. And then, of course, they were still touring with Devo. And, you know, so I kind of got a wonderful education there, coming up, learning how to, like, right away dealing with, you know, the top clients in the game, you know, Sony, Apple, you know, whoever, right away at a very young age. So I had to basically get very good very quickly.
Yeah. I watched a clip, YouTube clip, somebody interviewing Mark, and he was making references to some, of course, he's into art, and some gallery that kind of gave him his first start. And he, in that, made reference to, I guess I'm going to use the word right, early composer Perry Kinsley. Is that name ringing a bell at all?
The Spitz guy.
Yeah, right. The early 60s kind of cut and splice type composition of some of the music. And I went and actually found one of the records and listened to that, and just fascinated with how all of that started, and then, you know, bring it forward 40, 50, 60 years and your connection to Devo, and you know, you're a composer with different kinds of things, and then all of that, and then you end up drifting into this Americana project. That whole journey is just so cool, and that you can bounce between all of those so well. I mean, it's a very good record, and it's that kind of music is classic, but it's not necessarily easy, and you know, to be able to transition into that you know, after coming out of some of the other things that you've been doing is it's really good, and I enjoy it, and I love all of that connection between all of these different composers and studios that you've got.
I like to think that all these, you know, different kind of seemingly very opposite influences coming together, you know, kind of helped me have a unique sound.
Do you, is this the first Americana set of music that you've recorded?
No, I've been doing this band for over 10 years.
Okay.
So this will be the third full-length release.
Okay.
The last one was called Duel, and that's good too. I think this one is probably my best, and Duel's right behind it. And then, you know, it's interesting because I've sort of been figuring out, like, I didn't set out to, like, this will be Americana, and these are the rules I'm going to follow, you know. So there's experiments along the way. Like my first, the first full-length record I did, called The Great Giddy Up, was actually, you know, I used horns, like a horn section.
Oh, cool, okay.
See what that influence would be. And the kind of jumped around more stylistically, and there's more sort of rocking stuff in there. And even in Duel, there's more rock. There's like almost like a Southern rock Allman Brothers type guitar song, and then more of them are sort of electric guitar driven. And, you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers are a huge influence, and they're Traveling Wilburys. So
right.
I think in the sense that I was trying to write sort of economical pop songs, meaning not gratuitously long guitar solos or like real bloated, you know, like pretty concise, catchy tunes. And rock, but also sort of, you know, influenced by country and stuff like that in the first couple records. And then I sort of gravitated in this last record to more of a more acoustic sounding stuff, even though there's still drums in there and electric guitar from time to time. More rootsy, I guess you could say, on this album.
Do you get a chance to play out with this music with a band? Do you get to do any sort of tour?
No? No, I'm so busy. I mean, right now, obviously because of COVID, things have changed anyway, but with touring. But, you know, I don't. I'm so busy scoring stuff that I can't really get away to do that. Like, you know, the turnaround on a commercial can be 24 hours or less. I mean, I've literally scored commercials in less than an hour.
Wow.
And it's like, if you're in your studio and take that call and ready to work, you get paid. And if not, then you miss out. So,
yeah.
And usually when I'm scoring, I've, like, you know, usually when it's not COVID time, I've got 5 or 6 projects I'm juggling at the same time. So I'm super busy. And that's also why it takes, you know, 4, 3 or 4, 5, 6 years in between albums because I'm doing all that. But, you know, the other thing is I don't have a band. Patton Troubling 7 Deadly Sins is me. I'm playing most of the instruments.
Okay.
And then I like to say that the 7 Deadly Sins are whatever friends and family and an occasional session player, you know, comes in to help round out the album. For example, like fiddle, I don't play fiddle. So Vito Garcia plays fiddle. He's amazing. Comes in and does that. What else? I don't know. I've had my father play guitar on things. Mm-hmm. I've had the horn section I mentioned. My cousin Al Mothersbaugh, you know, played trombone. So it's really like, I love collaborating and bringing friends in and being like, hey, do you want to just play this random guitar solo in this part? Or, you know, you want to put down a piano part on this? Things like that. So it's not really a band that I could go to.
Right. Yeah. So when you create one of these projects, what is your, do you have a mission? Do you have a goal in mind with the end product that you want to see it achieve?
See it achieve. Well, you mean in terms of like sales or in terms of like a creative vision? Or
right. Yeah. I guess a creative vision. I mean, you know, if you take a typical Americana band that this is their full-time thing or their full-time mm-hmm. musical project, they cut a record to kind of support their touring or, you know, it's kind of it's almost anymore now. Unfortunately, sometimes the CD becomes your business card almost. It's a way to promote yourself. And with the approach that you have and it's you've got your day job that consumes most of your time. I'm just curious what you like, what you'd like to see this do in terms of, success is a dangerous word, but what would make you feel like it's done what you wanted it to do when you get done with it?
You know, I purposely try not to set high expectations on sales or like the reach of this stuff because I don't have a band to support it, because I don't have a record label. It's just me. I'm doing it on my own.
Yeah.
You know, my friend Nicole helped with, Nicole Good helps with some PR. It's just really word of mouth, you know, and on this day and age, it's mostly internet word of mouth.
Right, right. Yeah.
And, but you know, the people that hear it, and like this kind of music really seem to connect with it. And I hear back from friends, family, even from random people that'll reach out and email or you know, message or whatever. And they're like, I'm really connected with these songs. So for me, the end goal is to write songs that hold up, stand the test of time, which is another reason I'm expressing them through Americana, because I feel like that music does stand the test of time. I'm still listening to the songs in this genre from 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I think are great, you know? So there's some genres that don't stand the test of time, even if it's a great song, you know, maybe the, let's just say like the production of it is really annoying or something like that.
Right.
Maybe I'm more sensitive to it given my job, but I'm just trying to write really timeless, great songs that, you know, people will connect to. And my first single off this record, Song for Tom Petty, has gotten the best response from that from any song I've ever written.
Really?
It wasn't for a film or TV. Yeah. And people reaching, it's a little bit a sad song. I wrote it when the song died. It really hit me hard.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It felt like exactly. And so I wanted to write something that everyone could relate to. You know, we had lost a lot of people, a lot of great rock and roll country people,
right?
You know, started passing away around that time, different reasons. And everyone was feeling it and just like, oh, another one. And then when Tom died, that really hit me hard.
Yeah.
And so I wrote this song. But, you know, like his songs normally are, they're uplifting. Like his songs aren't depressing. You put those on, you want to drive down the highway.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it makes you feel good. So even though my song is about that, I made it very uplifting. And I've gotten messages from people being like, you know, my husband passed away and I've been listening to your song on repeat and it's really helping me out. Or, you know, someone else has passed away. I'm listening to it. It's really just, it's bringing me a lot of joy. And I'm like, do you like the rest of the album? They're like, I can't even get past the first song. I just have it on repeat.
Wow. That's cool.
Like, wow.
Yeah.
So, to me, it's like a huge compliment because it was something that I created that was so sincere and from my heart, you know, and then when people connect with it in that kind of way, that means everything to me.
Where did the name for the record come from?
Amigos? Uh-huh. You know, I noticed that as I was writing the songs, a lot of them were about friendship. And this band always kind of has been, you know, friends and family helping me out. And, you know, since I'm not, like, wildly popular, or this band isn't, like, you know, wildly known or anything, it's not like I have fans beating down the door for the next record, except for my friends and family that are like, when are you going to make another record?
Yeah,
we loved
okay.
the last one. Come on, get on it. You're in a music studio. Let's do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but I realized that was running through the sort of a theme that was running through a lot of the album was friendship. I mean, for Tom Petty, like, it felt like a friend died, even though he wasn't a friend, obviously. I didn't know him. But some of the other ones, like, I co-wrote with friends. Other ones have friends playing on it. Some of the lyrics are about friendship, and some of them are about loneliness, which is sort of a lack of friendship. So Amigos just felt fitting. And then, you know, talking to my friend Patrick Whitehorn, who has done artwork for a lot of my Satin Cowboy stuff, and he and I have been talking about how cool Blue Shadows on the Trail is as a song from the movie The Three Amigos.
Right, Randy and Newman,
Randy Newman tune. I always loved it because it had a very old, like, classic cowboy kind of feel to it,
right,
which is kind of goofy. I love the sort of almost goofiness of it, you know? It definitely doesn't take itself too seriously. And obviously, I'm a huge Randy Newman fan because of his songwriting, but also as a composer. And so that was the second single from Amigos that came out last month, was my cover of Blue Shadows on the Trail. And that one, again, you know, I had friends come in and help sing it because in the movie, it's Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Chevy Chase sitting around the campfire singing that song. So I thought, oh, I should do this with two other guys and do like a, you know, sort of like, you know, like in a tribute to how it's done in the movie. So I sing the first verse on the cover, and then the second verse is my friend Sam Nelson, who is an amazing singer, just a gorgeous voice. And he sang backup vocals on all my records, and I've helped him with his, and he's just a good buddy, and he happens to be Ricky Nelson's son.
Hmm, cool.
And, you know, Ozzy and Harriet, Ricky Nelson, he comes from that family.
Mm-hmm.
And, so his voice is just golden. So
yeah.
Love awesome. Hearing him sing. So,
yeah.
So he sings the second verse, and then, Steve Beeman, who is a singer, songwriter, producer, he kind of does music in a lot of different genres. He has a very cool voice, and I reached out to him through a mutual friend, and he came over and did the third verse. And so, so it was just like, you know, keeping with the friends and family theme, and so Amigos seemed fitting.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the record again is Amigos, and it drops yet this month, right? In July?
It drops August 25th.
Oh, August 20th. Okay, cool. All right.
And I have the third single coming out on July 28th.
Okay. So the third single is out this month. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
And if folks want to hear it and they want to order a copy, pre-order a copy, reach out to you, learn more about all of this, what's the best way to get in touch?
Well, SilasHeights.com has all my musical stuff, all the scoring, all the everything, and all of my bands. And I have a store there on that page where you can order a CD or a digital copy, like pre-order.
Yep.
And of course you can pre-order it just digitally, you know, on iTunes or wherever you do that. And I've got a couple of singles and my old records up on Spotify and iTunes and anywhere you would see music.
Awesome. Thanks, Silas. This has
but
been
remember,
fun. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Just remember, if you look up Silas Height on those sites, you'll find my composing scoring stuff. So if you want to find the album we're talking about, look up The Satin Cowboy and The Seven Deadly Sins.
Right, cool. And it's all on SilasHeite.com.
Yep. SilasHeite.com.
Awesome. Well, good. Well, thank you. I wish you well with it, man. I really enjoy the record, and I hope it I hope it does well for you, and I hope people listen and get a chance to go take a listen to your music.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thanks for your time.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.